as I was reflecting on today's readings, what came back to my mind was a event that captured the attention of the media a few years ago, maybe five or six years ago. It was a story of a little boy who visited the zoo with his family, and he fell into the enclosure of the gorillas, and this big gorilla grabbed the boy, and then there was a question, well, now what do we do? So the zookeepers, in order to save the boy, they shot the gorilla, killed him with one bullet, instant death. And there was a big controversy about that, because suddenly it was too bad. You know, a gorilla is a very fine animal, and it's kind of a treasure to a zoo. But people were saying that it was a terrible injustice, a crime. And of course, they couldn't blame the gorilla. He just did what gorillas do. They couldn't blame the baby, because he just did what children do. So they had to blame somebody. So they were trying to blame the zoo, then they were blaming the parents of the child, and then they're blaming everybody. But in fact, that was just what had to happen. So why did that come to mind? In today's first reading, we get another account of creation. So just leave that gorilla story aside for a moment. It'll come back. Another account of creation. This is what's sometimes referred to as the second creation account in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 2, the other one, Genesis chapter 1. Now, before we reflect on this, set aside the complaint that people make that these two are in contradiction. This is how people love to try to discount the treasure of the Bible. They'll say, well, the Bible contradicts itself, therefore it's not trustworthy. The contradiction in this case is the first creation account says that the plants came, then the birds and the sea creatures, and then the animals on the land, and then man. And this account says that man was created before there were any plants or animals. So it's true that in that detail of the chronological order, they don't agree. But these accounts were not written in order to answer the question, which came first. That's not why they were written. They answer a much deeper question, a foundational question, of where everything came from and what is its place in the order of creation. And it's clear from both accounts that man is at the highest, that plants are down at the bottom. No question about that. So the man here is created out of the clay of the ground. He receives the breath of life from God himself. It's another way of saying what we heard in the first creation account, that man is a unique creature because he's made in the image of God. Here he has the breath of God, the Spirit of God, unlike any other creature. And then the other creatures, in this case, just the plants, the trees, are made for man. And man is the gardener, the steward of creation. So the basic lesson is the same. Everything comes from God, and God puts man in a place of stewardship over creation. Now, this account adds an additional insight into the place of man. Man is free, but not with unlimited freedom, not absolute freedom. And this is true. This is what I think we know, or we should know. We're free. We can decide whether to eat this fruit or that fruit. We can decide what to do, whether to come here or go there, how to occupy ourselves. We're free, unlike any other creatures in the world that just follow their instincts or their nature. But it's not unlimited freedom. We cannot decide things that belong to God. We can't act as if we have the authority that belongs only to God. We cannot decide whether something is right or wrong. We can't say this wrong thing is actually right or this right thing is actually wrong. We can't say that that evil is good for me. That's a violation of our freedom, a misuse of our freedom. And this truth is taught by the existence of a tree in the garden from which the man is forbidden to eat. It's a symbol. It's a symbol. It's a very profound symbol. You don't have to look around in the world to see which tree was it or which kind of fruit was it. It represents the boundary which we are not permitted to cross because we are creatures, we are not God. It's quite a profound way of identifying this truth about our nature. So we are stewards, we have dignity, we have the breath of God, the Spirit of God, we have freedom, but we are not God. Back to the story of the gorilla. Even people who don't believe in God or don't believe in the Bible, almost anyone, any reasonable person would say the right thing to do if you have a choice between a gorilla and a baby, you save the baby. You don't even have to think about why. But if you do think about it, you realize it's because the baby is a different kind of creature than a gorilla. The gorilla might be older, it might be stronger, it might be, I don't know, maybe even more expensive, I don't know. But you can't compare them because a human person is in the image of God, and human person is of priceless value. You do anything you can to save the baby, even if you have to kill the gorilla. Okay. Now, the baby, even if, of course, it was innocent. The gorilla was innocent too. They were both innocent. But even if the baby was a bad baby, or a disobedient child, or a foolish child, it doesn't make any difference. Because that the value of the child isn't based on what it's capable of, or how smart it is, or whether he came from a rich family or a poor family, or whatever his race is or nationality. It doesn't make any difference. He's a human person. Okay. It shows that the lessons taught by the first chapters of Genesis are so deep in us, we just know it already. We know that you save the human person, even if you have to sacrifice a precious animal. And we do this sort of thing all the time. We kill animals all the time. We eat them. I mean, if they get in the way, you know, if a precious migratory bird is flocking at an airport, you get them out of the way so that they don't interfere with air traffic. And people say, well, those birds, the poor birds. Sure, it's a shame. If you can save them, it's better. But if you can't save them, you have to sacrifice them because human life is more valuable. Those kind of decisions, maybe I don't even have to dwell on because it's so obvious to us. When we turn to the gospel, Jesus gives us a further insight on the use of the freedom and the limits of the freedom that were already set in the foundation of which are already set in today's first reading. We have freedom, so we can make choices, but we can defile ourselves if we misuse that freedom. We're not defiled by what happens. We're not defiled by accidents or by things that come in the course of nature. We're not defiled if someone harms us and we're innocent victims. We're not defiled by that. We might be hurt, we might be killed. But it doesn't mean there's any moral fault on our part. So Jesus says, nothing that enters one from outside can defile. Now he's talking specifically about foods. Foods which are given to us from God, by God, in the order of nature, in the nature of creation, all the plants are given to us as food. So how can they defile us? There's no moral quality, inherent moral quality to foods. But things that come out from within us defile us. Now he's talking about moral defilement. He's talking about guilt, spiritual stain. Well, how can these evil things come out from within us? If we misuse our freedom, if we choose things that are not legitimate to choose, if we act as if something that is evil is good, if we defy the order that God puts in nature, that's an evil that comes from within us. It doesn't come from God, it doesn't come by accident, it comes by our own free choice, wrong free choice. In the case of that gorilla story, there was no moral fault there. People want to blame someone. Can't blame the gorilla, you can't blame the child, you can't blame the zoo. Well, maybe if the zoo didn't have a high enough wall or something, you say, well, that was irresponsible. Or maybe you could blame the parents. Why didn't they watch their child? Sure. Maybe they were at fault, but not deliberately. Maybe they just got distracted or they were buying popcorn or something. I don't know. The point is, the terrible loss of the gorilla is not a defilement of any human person. But Jesus goes on to make a list of what does defile. And we know, as soon as we hear the words, that these things defile us. Evil thoughts, unchastity, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, etc. Yeah. These things make ugly what is supposed to be beautiful. Our heart, created by God, our being filled with the Spirit of God, the breath of God, is supposed to recognize, respect, follow the beautiful order of God. And when we don't do it, well, then we defile ourselves and we bring upon ourselves the consequences of that defilement. God doesn't have to punish us for sin. We punish ourselves when we sin. We defile ourselves. Now, the gospel ends with this business about defilement. The good news is, even though we defile ourselves, there is a way to be restored. And Jesus is the answer to that question too. In the beginning, when we were created, we were created innocent. We were created good. Sin enters the story. We'll hear about that tomorrow. But defiles us. God is not defeated by sin. He establishes a new way, a way to be healed, restored, made clean. And that's through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So, let's use our freedom in the way that gives glory to God and in a way that respects our own nature, our own dignity, a way that is in harmony with the Spirit, the breath of God that we have received.